Hello, I'm Kyle Willoughby, and joining me is Claire White.
Hello.
And this is Dragons, Sexy Robots, and Adventures, a Nerd Manual. We are here to discuss new nerd creations, how they were made, and explore the roots of the characters and the stories. Today, we are talking about Captain America Civil War! This new Marvel movie just came out May 6th of 2016 this year, and we will be discussing the history of the story and production of the movie itself. And so I will start with the history of Civil War. And by Civil War, I'm talking about Marvel Civil War, not Abe Lincoln.
No, maybe that's another podcast.
That'll be a different podcast, The Adventures of Honest Abe. But so the movie Captain America Civil War is based loosely on Marvel's Civil War event in the comic books.
Okay.
They had a big event where there was a big civil war between the superheroes fighting each other.
And it was Captain America and Iron Man?
It was Captain America leading one team and Iron Man leading another. So obviously the movie borrows heavily from it, but is actually a lot different than the comics. So in the comic book story, the Civil War gets kicked off in this manner. There's a group of heroes called the New Warriors. Their gimmick is they're reality TV superheroes. So they bring a reality TV crew with them to film them catching bad guys. And they're a little amateur. They're not like your top tier heroes.
So Class C? I think they call it Class C
class
in the comics.
C. Yeah, yeah. So they're going to get this group of supervillains, and this one villain, Nitro, is more powerful than they are able to handle. And in the process of the New Warriors trying to get Nitro, Nitro sets off an explosion that kills 612 people, including children, and this takes place in Stamford, Connecticut, and it's called the Stamford Incident in the comics. So after this explosion, all these people die, bystanders, innocent bystanders. There's a public outcry.
It also took place right by an elementary school, right?
Yeah, it was right by he was tackled into a bus full of kids.
Yeah.
And then exploded. So it was pretty bad. So of course, there's a public outcry. The people are like, we need to register these superhumans because they need to answer to someone. They can't just be regulating themselves. It's not working. And the act that is kind of pushed through Congress is called the Superhuman Registration Act, or the SRA. And it's any person with special powers or quote-unquote exotic technology, like people like Iron Man, who maybe doesn't have powers, but he's got a suit that he built, must register with the government and reveal their identity to the government. And it's all going to go in a government database. So obviously a lot of heroes were upset by this, and, you know, they don't want the government knowing their secret identity because it can fall into the wrong hands really easily. So yeah, it's a very divisive issue amongst the superhero community. Now, S.H.I.E.L.D. is tasked with rounding up all the superhumans that don't want to register.
And for those who don't know, what S.H.I.E.L.D.?
S.H.I.E.L.D. is an acronym that stands for the Strategic Homeland Intervention Enforcement and Logistics Division. Mm. But everyone, yes, kind of a mouthful. It's a good thing they
shortened
it to S.H.I.E.L.D. So S.H.I.E.L.D. is a division of the government that is into counterintelligence and counterterrorism, and they deal a lot with the superheroes in the Marvel Universe. So S.H.I.E.L.D. is tasked with enforcing this at the SRA, the Superhuman Registration Act. And they go to Captain America and tell Captain America, like, look, we need you to round up all the superheroes that aren't going to register. Captain America says, no way, I'm not going to lock up my buddies, and I don't agree with superhumans having to register either. And so the director of S.H.I.E.L.D., Maria Hill, who is played by Kobe Smulders in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Oh, that's the same person.
That's the same person, yeah. Says, it orders her soldiers, her agents, to arrest Captain America. Obviously, they don't because Captain America fights his way out.
He's Captain America.
He's Captain America. And Captain America bolts and starts gathering heroes that are against this registration and don't want to register to form his own secret Avengers.
So, an Avengers from the Avengers.
Yes. Now, in the meantime, Tony Stark, who agrees with registration, gathers heroes who agree with registration, and they form like a government-sanctioned Avengers. And they're going out to try and find people who are dodging registration. So, obviously, putting them at odds with Captain America's secret Avengers. So one of the things Tony Stark is doing is when he's capturing heroes who are against registration, he's locking them up in another dimension, essentially, saying that they can be interred indeterminately, like forever, because they're not state-sanctioned entities. So it's a little messed up. And by little, I mean a lot. It's a lot messed up what he's doing. Eventually, Tony Stark's Avengers face off against Cap's secret Avengers. You know, Tony Stark kind of lures him into a fight. They get into a battle. A clone of Thor shows up on the Tony Stark side, and it's like an evil clone of Thor that was created.
Is Thor not in this?
Thor is not in this. The thing is, if Thor was in Civil War, whoever's side Thor was on would be the winning side, essentially.
Okay, he's just too powerful.
So there's they have a clone of Thor that was created by Hank Pym, Reed Richards, and Tony Stark, who are all for registration.
And they are?
Hank Pym is Ant-Man, Reed Richards is Mr. Fantastic, and Tony Stark is Iron Man.
Oh, okay.
But all three of those characters are more known for their brains than anything. Like, they're the super smarties. Now, so their clone of Thor shows up and is just a huge asshole, and in the fight shoots lightning right through Bill Foster, who's Giant Man, who is fighting for Captain America's side, and kills him.
Ooh.
And so, yeah, kind of first blood is really drawn, and Captain America's team escape. But a lot of the people who were on Iron Man's side are bummed out that they built an evil clone of Thor.
Yeah, but did they do it with everyone else knowing?
No, it was kind of under wraps. Reed Richards, Mr. Fantastic, his wife actually leaves him because of it.
Wow.
Yeah, Susan Storm, who's another superhero. And she goes and joins Cap's side. So Civil War kind of culminates with a big battle that takes place in New York between Cap's Secret Avengers and Iron Man sanctioned Avengers, and there's so much collateral damage that at the end, bystanders are flinging themselves onto Captain America, being like, stop, stop, you guys are destroying everything. Captain America looks around and sees he's like, all right, fine. We did destroy a lot of stuff. This has been bad. And he surrenders and turns himself in under the conditions that anyone who was fighting with him gets the chance to just register and not go to prison.
Very Captain America thing to do.
Yes, yes. And that's essentially the end of Civil War. I mean, a ton of stuff happens after that, and a ton more stuff happened during it that I didn't mention, but that's kind of the watered-down version.
The bare bones.
Yeah, yeah. So one of the things I want to talk about is the idea that government gone bad.
We love that.
We love it. And that's a fairly recent thing. When I say fairly recent, I mean like 80s.
Do you think it came
comics.
From Nixon? It totally came from Nixon.
You could argue that point that it came from Nixon. But prior to the 80s, normally your superheroes are fighting with and for America.
Yeah.
And, and for the American way.
Nixon and Nam.
Yeah. Maybe kind of shatter that dream a little bit. In the 80s, you start to see government going really bad in comics. You got comics like The Watchmen by Alan Moore, which is a legendary comic where a group of superheroes are sanctioned by the government because the government passes a thing called the Keene Act, and they have to work for the government now, and the government's using them in Vietnam.
Yeah.
And
aren't Marvel or DC characters.
No, these
they're based on
But
them.
They're based on Marvel and DC characters. They create kind of a dystopia. I don't even know if I'd call it a dystopia because it's not a very clean looking world. It's not like the Capitol in Hunger Games. it's very dirty. Dark Knight Returns was another 80s comic written by Frank Miller.
Frank Miller and Alan Moore.
Yeah, two of the big names where Superman was working for a corrupt American government and had to face off against Batman at the end of that. So the idea behind the government kind of going bad and turning against the heroes can largely be traced back to X-Men, actually, and the X-Men Days of Future Past comics, which came out in 1981. And in those comics, there's something called the Mutant Control Act, where the government's trying to round up all the mutants. And again, later, also in the 80s, another X-Men comic, Uncanny X-Men number 181, which came out in 1984, featured the first time we ever hear the words Mutant Registration Act. And that's something, the Mutant Registration Act is something that has been going on in comics since.
Yeah, because I've heard it.
Yeah, because you've heard it. It was in the first X-Men movie, even.
That's probably where I first heard it.
Yeah. Now, there's a difference between the Mutant Registration Act and the Superhero or the Superhuman Registration Act in that the Mutant Registration Act only applies to mutants. The difference between a mutant and someone with superpowers is that mutants are genetically a different species than us, and they're born with their powers.
Oh.
So people like the Fantastic Four were born human, but they got exposed to whatever. Peter Parker bit by the spider. They were born human, and they get powers from these outside sources through, like, a traumatic event. And somehow they're more, or they're less threatening in Marvel's eyes then.
They understand
in the
humans
government's
better,
eyes. Yeah, because they're humans, technically, just with superpowers. And that Mutant Registration Act, like I said, has been a big deal in comics since it came out in the 80s, where a lot of superheroes will fight, you know, to keep that from being put into law. So another person I wanted to talk about is Bucky Barnes, also known as the Winter Soldier. Like, he was in the last Captain America movies, and this Captain America movie is a big part in both those movies. He originally, when Bucky Barnes was created in the comics, was Captain America's kind of boy wonder sidekick, like Robin was to Batman.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and he was not a peer of Captain America's. He was like his kid friend sidekick who helped him punch Nazis in the face.
Okay.
Very different than what you see on the screen. He first appeared in 1941. And so him and Captain America are running around fighting Nazis all through the 40s. Captain America gets canceled in the 50s because they run out of Nazis to fight. World War II's over, and they don't really know how to write for him after that. So he gets canceled in the 50s. They bring him back in the 60s. And when they bring him back, you find out that shortly after World War II, Captain America and Bucky were in a plane crash. Bucky was lost and presumed dead. Captain America was frozen on ice. It was a plane crash off the coast of Newfoundland. And so the Captain America that was fighting in the 50s, not fighting Nazis, was someone that Harry Truman had put in there to keep the morale up. They didn't want anyone knowing that Captain America was gone and that Bucky was dead. And so since that time, Bucky Barnes has been one of the few characters in the Marvel Universe that has stayed dead.
Because comics, I guess.
Because comics, yeah. Because comics, superheroes are always coming back to life. No one stays dead in comics.
Who else stayed dead?
The only other people who've really stayed dead are Uncle Ben from Spider-Man comics.
Yeah.
And Gwen Stacy, also from Spider-Man comics.
Oh, Spider-Man.
I know. Everyone he cares about is dead. He's the only one who has people that actually stay dead. So Bucky stayed dead for a long time. Bucky was one of the few characters who was dead for a long time until he was brought back from the dead by Ed Brubaker in 2005, so really recent.
Wow, that recently.
Yeah, as the Winter Soldier. The Soviets found Bucky's body and experimented on him and made him a super soldier like Captain America.
Wow, Ed Brubaker. I'm a huge fan of his too.
Yeah, he's really good. Really good writer. And so that's kind of the history behind Bucky Barnes. So I thought that was pretty interesting that he was one of the few characters who came back from the dead.
That is really interesting.
Yeah, yeah. What have you got for me, Claire? Captain America Civil War production notes.
Well, this is the 13th movie made by Marvel Studios. Not the 13th Marvel movie, because they're X-Men and the other Spider-Mans and the Fantastic Four. Yeah. But those weren't made by Marvel Studios. This is Marvel, part of their world that they've created. What I find really interesting, and especially lately for their latter movies, you don't have to be a big director to get hired by Marvel.
Huh.
Even the stars. Look at the stars. They're not hiring the biggest names to be a star.
They weren't really big until...
Yeah, until...
They became a superhero.
Exactly. Chris Evans.
Captain
America was the role that really made him famous.
Yeah.
So this movie is directed by Joe and Anthony Russo. And beforehand, they had directed Captain America Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
And before that, no one had really, really heard of them.
I'd never heard of them.
Now, they had won an Emmy before. They won an Emmy for directing the pilot episode of Arrested Development.
Oh,
and they were also well known because they produced and directed the TV show Community.
I love the TV show Community.
I love Community too. But besides that and a couple of independent movies, no one had ever heard of them. It was actually like a really bold choice when Marvel announced that they were going to direct Winter Soldier.
It paid off because Winter Soldier was amazing.
It was so good. I'm going to give a little bit of a backstory on them. They were discovered by Steven Soderbergh, actually. their first movie, they completely self-financed. They said with their credit cards. And they took it to Slamdance, which is a film festival, and Soderbergh saw it there and basically agreed to produce their next movie, which didn't do well. But there was this whole movement in television at the time, which kind of leads to where television is now, but TV shows were becoming more indie. Okay. And because they were indie directors, FX actually hired them to do a show called Lucky.
Sounds vaguely familiar.
It was a show about a gambler, very dark.
Okay.
But it only lasted for one season, but the industry loved it. And because of that, they got Arrested Development, which they actually helped cast. And
that's such a well-cast show.
It's such a well-cast show. And they directed the pilot episode. That's when they won an Emmy for. And then, I mean, they've been around. They directed You, Me, and Dupree.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's them.
I like that movie, too.
I actually haven't seen that movie. I was watching the trailers. Cute. It looked cute.
Yeah.
They worked on the TV show Happy Endings. And then they worked a lot on Community. And
the TV show Community?
The TV show Community.
I love that TV show.
Yes.
It's maybe my favorite TV show ever.
Oh, I love that TV show, too. And actually, there's an episode in Community. There's actually a reoccurring episode in Community, which involves a paintball war.
They did the paintball episode.
They directed the paintball episode. And I think it's the second season paintball episode where Kevin Feige, who is the head of Marvel Studios, he oversees everything from the TV shows to the movies.
Yeah.
He saw the paintball episode and he thought, these guys should direct an action movie. And that's what put the Russo brothers on the list of people who could potentially direct Captain America Winter Soldier.
If I had that kind of power, that would have put them on my list as well.
Anyone who had a hand in Community.
Yeah, anyone,
Chevy Chase.
Yeah, anyone who had a hand in Community, they'd be doing everything for me.
And they said that they really clicked with Kevin Feige. They weren't a shoo-in to direct Captain America Winter Soldier, but on a creative level, they really connected
with them.
Yeah. And they are said they're attracted to experiments as far as their movie making goes. And they see the Marvel franchise as one huge experiment.
It totally is.
Which it totally is.
Very successful experiment.
So far. Well, not all experiments are successful, but this one happens to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Captain America Civil War is written by Christopher Marcus and Stephen McFeely. And this is their fifth time working with Marvel. They made Captain America the First Avenger, Thor 2, The Dark World, Captain America Winter Soldier, and my favorite Marvel franchise, Agent Carter.
Agent Carter!
So they have a pretty good handle on the Captain America world, especially.
Yeah, they definitely do.
So while doing interviews, the Russos talk a lot about the process, and they talk about how much time they spend on the script. For this particular script, they said they spent a year and a half writing it, just with the writers, and fleshing out what every character is thinking or feeling in every scene.
That's insane. That's such a long time.
So much time. But they said that every moment had to be earned. And even if the character is not saying much, if they do say something, why are they saying it? And if they're not saying anything, every character in the room, what are they thinking? Why are they thinking it?
It totally shows.
And they said that it's ensemble work, and they love ensemble pieces, which, if you look at their history,
makes Arrested Development,
so much sense. Community. Community is a huge ensemble piece, that whole show. And they talk a lot about how characters have to earn their beats.
Yeah.
Everything has to be earned. Nothing can just be there because they need it to be there.
They have to be for the story. No Martha moments.
No Martha moments. And if you don't know what that is, you can watch Batman v Superman. You know, and also for introducing new characters, you can't just bring in a character and it makes no sense because they introduced both Spider-Man and Black Panther.
Yeah, Black Panther, yeah.
And it makes sense when they come in.
Yeah, it does. It definitely does. And it's not like they're not beating your head against a wall with
it either. No, or just like, here's Black Panther.
Yeah.
Believe that this just happened. Also, they talk about wanting to deconstruct the superhero genre. So this is, in their words, the superhero genre has three acts. In the first act, the hero has a personal problem, and we as the audience get introduced to the villain. In the second act, the villain comes into conflict with the hero. In the third act, the hero beats up the villain.
Okay.
So they say it's a great formula, it works, but this is from an interview that I read with them. You like chocolate ice cream, but if you keep on having to eat chocolate ice cream, you might not like it so much anymore. Yeah. You'll get tired of it. And they don't want people to get tired of these movies. So making this movie, they didn't want to make like a traditional superhero movie. They wanted to make more of a psychological thriller that evolves into a character thriller.
And it totally does. There's not, like, you understand where everyone's coming from, even the quote-unquote bad guys.
And it doesn't have the traditional beats. And the bad guy is really, it's understated, he's not some great mega character that everyone has to come against.
Yeah, yeah.
And they are also saying, as far as the Marvel Universe as a whole goes, they think that there's this whole new movement in film going on where it's a lot, takes a lot more to get the audience to the theater because we have such great TV right in front of us.
Right now, especially.
And they think that the audiences want an emotional investment in the long-term narrative.
Which you can really see is kind of what's going on in the MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think they're the only ones who are really doing it. DC is kind of doing it. I guess
Star Wars is kind of doing it.
Fox in some ways. But they think this is the direction that movies are heading and the only way that movies are really going to be able to stay competitive with TV, because why else are you going to pay to see something in the theater when you can see it for free at home?
It's to make them a show that you see maybe once or twice a year.
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's a really interesting, good point. Like,
speaking
I can see
of the Marvel experiment, this is what they are really seeing as long term.
Yeah.
So, and they're actually set to direct the next two Avengers movies, Avengers Infinity War, which is going to be two. They're filming it all at once, but it'll be separated into two movies, Lord of the Rings style.
Yeah, yeah.
They have a great working relationship with Marvel. At least that's what they say, and I believe it. They're signing up for more movies doing two.
Yeah.
They say that Marvel gives them crazy freedom. And actually, it was their idea to do the next Captain America installment as Civil War. They had to convince Kevin Feige that this is a good idea.
That we could do this and not leave too many loose ends that need to be wrapped up.
And they actually had to go recruit. After they convinced Marvel, they had to go recruit Robert Downey Jr.
Because he wasn't signed on
He wasn't contracted
else.
To it.
Oh, my God. And they got RDJ.
They got RDJ.
Wow. These are some convincing dudes.
Yeah, and who work well with Marvel. And I think it's really interesting because you also read how difficult Marvel is to work with.
Yeah, I read that Joss Whedon had trouble working with them in the end. And
right. He said in the editing room of Age of Ultron, Marvel got really hands-on and made him cut things that he didn't want to cut.
Yeah, yeah.
It was really hard. Edgar Wright had been set to direct the next Ant-Man. He'd actually done all the pre-production. He'd written the script.
Yeah.
He had cast the movie. And at the last minute, he got fired by Marvel or he left. And they brought
it's
in
unclear.
Someone else to direct the movie, and they reworked the script.
Yeah, I had actually read an interview with Joss Whedon where he says that Ant-Man script was the best script that Marvel had out of everything that they had. It was the best script Joss Whedon had ever seen for any of the Marvel movies, and they were sitting on it for a long time. So that's
and then
really
they just kicked him off.
And they kicked him out.
Yeah, and I think part of the reason they're so hard to work for is because they are very controlling over their franchise. They kind of have to be because there's so many moving parts.
Yeah.
And I mean, and I don't know what goes on in the rooms and I don't know, you know, what the conversations were. But I think it's very cool that they have people like the Russos who just seem to get what they're
really
going
get
for.
What they're doing.
Yeah. And that they are able to make this amazing movie and have the full support of Marvel behind them.
Yeah, and seem to be working really, really well with Marvel.
Yeah, I mean,
if
good.
The last two movies or anything.
Yeah, and signing up for two more.
Sign up for two more.
So, that leads us to,
what did we think about Captain America: Civil War?
Kyle, what did you think?
I loved it. It was so good. I thought it was so good. I have a friend who wasn't that into it, and I don't understand where she's coming from. I thought it was an amazing movie. What'd you think, Claire?
I really liked it. I was so impressed. Yeah. I went in with high expectations because I had read really good reviews.
Same.
And it surpassed my expectations.
Yeah, did not disappoint. Even going in knowing that it's like, people say it's really good, the hype was, hype was real for me.
Yeah, no, it's very real for me. Anything in particular that you really liked about it?
First of all, the casting for all the Marvel movies are really great. Like, Robert Downey Jr. is Iron Man, Chris Evans is Captain America, but there were so many people in this movie, and yet to me it felt like they all had room to breathe. Nothing seemed rushed. It didn't seem like anyone didn't get a spot, and everything, like you said, was earned. It's when they say that, when you were talking about how they say that their characters have to earn their spots, they was totally the case in this movie.
Yeah, you believed emotionally everywhere that it went. And it goes to some dark places.
It definitely does.
It also really makes sense. And we've talked a lot about Batman v Superman, and of course you have to compare it to this. It was actually supposed to open this weekend, and they pushed it back to March.
DC, I think, was a little scared.
I mean,
of
rightly
Civil War.
So. Can you imagine if they opened on the same weekend?
Yeah. Oh, that would have been bad.
I saw this with our producer, and I turned to him and I said, what if Batman vs. Superman had opened this weekend? Like, what do you think would have happened?
It would have been rough for Batman v. Superman.
Yeah.
A movie that had its own good points, but also some low points. I don't know. I can't think of a low point in Civil War.
I was also... So I didn't grow up reading comic books. It's something I got into later. And I know Spider-Man is everyone's favorite comic when they're a little boy. And I feel like I've seen all... Well, actually, I didn't see the Andrew Garfield Spider-Mans, but I saw all the Tobey Maguire ones. And this is the first time that I ever understood why Spider-Man is everyone's favorite comic book character.
Best Spider-Man I've seen on screen.
Oh, it was so good. It was so good. And we are in Queens, and so when they introduce Spider-Man, Queens comes up and the theater starts screaming.
And the theater cheers. And there's a scene where Spider-Man is talking to Captain America, and Captain America says, "Where are you from, kid?" And he says, "Queens." And the theater erupted in cheers, and then Captain America says, "I'm from Brooklyn," and there were some boos.
Not in my theater.
there were some boos. It's pretty funny. As far as how this movie compares to the Civil War comic book, I like the movie a lot more, honestly.
No, me too. I don't know, because I've only read the Civil War comic book, and I know there's a bunch of adjoining comics that go with it. So I didn't read those, and maybe I'm missing out on it. But I liked Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Evans more than I liked Captain America and Iron Man in the comics.
Yeah, you feel
they were better
more.
People almost.
Yeah, you feel more for both of them in the movie. Like, you're more sympathetic to both of them in the film as opposed to the
And they do
the
asshole
comics.
Things in the comics. They Not do. In the movie they don't. Do. Everyone's the movie, they very don't. Like they're fighting but they don't want to fight.
Yeah, they're very civil about it, and they you can see that they regret it, you know.
Yeah, but in the comics Iron Man enlists villains?
Enlists villains to hunt down unregistered superheroes.
Yeah.
Yes, didn't get to that. Another weird thing about the comic is that in the comic series The Road to Civil War, which leads up to the Civil War event in the Marvel Universe, Captain America and Iron Man and Hank Pym, Ant-Man, and
Reed Richards.
And Reed Richards, Mr. Fantastic, were really against the Superhuman Registration Act. So then all of a sudden they flip. I mean, I guess the explosion in Connecticut is what does it, but it felt a little weird for them to be so vehemently against it.
And then do a 180.
And be like, well, we need the other side to be stocked with people, so.
Yeah. That makes sense. It's just as weird, and I feel like all the work that the directors put in to the script.
Yeah.
It wasn't, I don't know what it was put into the comic, but I felt that it was a better job with that than they did in the comic of fleshing out the characters. Yeah. The comic also has a lot more characters.
A lot more
It's basically
characters.
Every Marvel character except for Thor. Is Hulk
and
in it?
Hulk's not in it. It's Thor and Hulk are not in it, which is, they couldn't be.
They're too powerful.
It's so funny that you mentioned that the Russos had a hand in Community, a big hand, because at the beginning of Captain America Civil War, Dean Pelton from Community shows up, and it's such a nice
playing
thing.
Playing a Dean.
Pretty much playing the Dean. I don't know what his character's credited name is, but if it's credited as Dean Pelton, that's going to be hilarious. He's such a fun character, and it was such a treat to see him on screen.
Yeah, and we talked about this before, but what I really appreciate from the Marvel Universe is that Kevin Feige, again, the head of Marvel, says that one of the big things that Marvel stresses about is that they don't want their movies to get too dark. They've kind of created a more lighthearted universe. And it's not completely sunshine all the time.
Yeah.
But they don't want it to turn into a dark, dismal, over-serious, yeah, universe.
And that's funny because that, like, we were just talking about the dean from Community. Jim Rash is the actor. He has a really funny scene. Immediately after that scene is a really serious one with Robert Downey Jr. and
Angela Bassett.
Angela Bassett. And, you know, the same setting.
Same place.
Same place, yeah. It wasn't like they cut to a whole new area, but it went from this really lighthearted, funny to pretty sad and serious.
Yeah.
Immediately.
Yeah, and they do a really good job of finding that balance most of the time.
Yeah, I think so. I certainly think so. It's just so cool to see these fun Marvel movies that have these really high, funny highs, but tackle serious issues at the same time.
And have really high believable stakes.
High believable stakes, yeah. Every moment's earned, and it's really wonderful. So thank you all so much for listening. Once again, I'm Kyle Willoughby.
And I'm Claire White.
And we are Dragons, Sexy Robots, and Adventures, A Nerd Manual. We love listener feedback, so please leave a comment and feel free to contact us. Our website can be found at dsrapodcast.com. I can be found on Twitter at Klex, KLEX303.
I can be found at Along with Claire.
And you can contact our producer, James, at James Fowey Jr. That's James Fowey, F-O-U-H-E-Y-J-R, on Twitter as well. If you enjoyed this podcast, we would love you to rate and review us on iTunes. Once again, this is Dragons, Sexy Robots, and Adventures, A Nerd Manual. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next time.